Hi, this is Steve Poore, and you're listening to Pioneers and Pathfinders. Today, we welcome Sue Bunnell, Assistant General Counsel and Executive Director at Wells Fargo, and more importantly, a career catalyst. Sue has been with Wells Fargo for over 2 decades, serving many different functions. In her current role, she partners with senior business, risk, and compliance leaders. In addition, though, and of perhaps more interest, she oversees the Catalyst Program, which helps high-potential professionals learn and examine their goals in order to achieve the next steps in their careers. Sue is also a frequent speaker who facilitates workshops for a wide range of groups, and she partners one-on-one with professionals, focusing on strong self-advocacy skills. Additionally, Sue is board co-chair at Leading Women in Technology, an organization that helps professional women develop the skills, experience, and approaches necessary to map their own paths to success and achieve their goals. She's also a board member at Professional Business Women of California. In our conversation, Sue talks about the importance of self-advocacy, the qualities of an ideal mentor, the Catalyst Program, and her work in leading women in technology. Thanks to Sue for an inspiring conversation. I hope you enjoy. Sue, thanks so much for making the time.
Happy to be here. Thanks.
I look forward to our conversation. Let's start by talking a little bit. I heard you speak at the recent Solid West conference in San Francisco, and you were fabulous. You gave a presentation that I've not heard anyone give before on effective self-advocacy. Talk to us a little bit about your thoughts around that topic. You were very passionate about it, which was great. What is it about that issue that's got you so passionate?
Well, I'm really excited about helping people to see that they've got agency in their own career. I think I'm of a certain generation. I'm in the second half of my 50s, and I look at my own generation and the two working generations behind me, and I think there has been progress, but I think we also see a lot of folks, men and women, who are tremendously good at their jobs. They're excellent workers, but they haven't experienced a level of success that correlates or corresponds to the amount of effort being put out there. And sometimes I think it has less to do with the quality of their work and more to do with the steps that they're taking to make sure that the decision makers around them, that they're aware of their achievements, they're keeping their potential top of mind, and that they really know what they want. Because at the end of the day, my goal is to help folks turn their excellence into success. And I think that, again, we do a great job at the work, but a much less pointed, intentional, and productive job at the art of promoting ourselves, advocating for ourselves. And I don't mean it in a smarmy sort of used car salesman-esque way. I mean it in an appropriate, helpful, right, and productive way to really move your career forward.
How do you help people find that line between appropriate, productive, and smarmy used car salesman, to use your phrase?
I know. I'm maligning all used car salesmen. I apologize. I work with a lot of women. I also work with men. And I think on both accounts, we're all a little afraid of crossing that line. And that's not true of everyone. Of 100 people, I think there are 5 people who are really actively promoting themselves. And I think the bulk of us are hoping that our work speaks for itself. We don't want to pander. We don't want to be seen to be begging, frankly, for credit and acknowledgement that we think should just come with the work that we do. I genuinely think that when you reframe self-advocacy from give it to me, it's mine, to, hey, I want to keep the people who matter informed on where I am. I want to keep the people who are making decisions abreast of what my goals are. I want to make sure that the hires up in the group understand that I have ambition, that I think there are some who see ambition as a terrible, bad thing. I'm not one of those people. I think all of us have ambition. We all want to do more. Some of us want to do it in the position we're in, to take on new responsibilities, take on new projects, take on new challenges. Some of us want a promotion or a raise or something a little bit more of a crisp change. But regardless, we all want something more. And the idea that we're going to want something more, say nothing about it, and just keep our head down really flies in the face of logic. The plain fact is that not everything that you advocate for is going to come to pass, but it vastly increases your chance of being in the consideration set, being really thought of for a role or an opportunity to be talking about it yourself in a way that does, of course, highlight your ability to make a difference, to meet a challenge, to handle an obstacle, to reach an objective. Not just for yourself, I want this, I want this, I want this, but really in the larger sense, a contextualized framing of course, you have ambitions for yourself, but for the decision maker, here's how it would promote the interests of the team or the division or the company or your manager, because that matters too.
And you put up one of those slides that is just, it's brilliant because it says something that everyone sort of goes, duh, I knew that. But nobody thinks about it, where you talk about, I can't remember the exact quote, but about how most decisions about your career are made in rooms that you're not in.
Right. Every major decision about your career and your opportunities is made in a room that you're not in. So you really do need to ask yourself, are the people in that room, are they even aware of me? If there's a decision to be made, am I even in the consideration set? Is my hat in the ring, as it were, right? Do they know what I've done? I think we think that our leaders know every aspect of our achievement, but the reality is they've got a lot on their plate. And unless it feeds exactly into a KPI or an SLA or some other metric or data that's tracked tightly, they may not be aware of all the amazing that we bring. They certainly may not be thinking about the potential that we have, right? They may not be weaving together the disparate threads of our awesomeness and understanding that we really can bring it for the next role. And more than anything, if we ask them, do they know what we want? Because even the best manager, you know, who likes you and loves your work, if they're not aware, if you haven't made them aware of your goals, your ambitions, the reality is they're going to be making decisions based on what works for them, right? Not necessarily what aligns with your goals or interests. And the hard truth is that change for change's sake is not what most managers are about. They're for change that has a purpose. And even when the change has a purpose, sometimes it's a challenge. But again, even great managers, if they're not aware of your ambitions and goals for yourself, they're highly unlikely to stumble across the exact right answer for you. They're going to organize their teams, their assignments, their clients, their challenges, their construct entirely around what works best for them. And you can't fault them because you haven't told them what you want, right? Again, there's that whole sense of agency.
Right. How much of your time do you spend mentoring and training other people on an individual basis as opposed to running? I want to talk about Catalyst here in a minute, but how much of your time do you spend working on this?
A good amount, really. I've been with the bank for 23. I'm in my 24th year. And so over that time, I've had the great good fortune to develop a lot of relationships, places where folks mentor me. But as I get later in my career, more incidents where folks I used to manage or folks I worked with on a project, where there are a lot of people who I still do a one-on-one with them every month or every quarter just to touch base and check in with them. Once somebody matters, once they make my radar, they kind of don't drop off, which is something that I'm really proud of. And of course, I used to run a team. I recently handed my team over to a gal who used to report to me, and I couldn't be happier and walked and mentored her through that transition as a first-time manager for her. So I guess probably about a quarter of my time is spent on mentoring in one flavor or another. Wells Fargo is fantastic, and they've supported me as I've been on the board of Professional Businesswomen of California, as I've been on the board of Leading Women in Technology, to women's professional development organizations. And I think all of that sort of came home to roost for the department when I had the opportunity to create Catalyst, which is a professional development program for high potential mid-level individual contributors who were nominated and then selected for a program that we're running internally. It's about a 6-month program that really helps them to see a clearer path forward for themselves. I think my conversations with individuals inside and outside the bank, it's always, when you get started talking, it's pretty clear what the person wants, right? What they'd like to see happen. I think there's sometimes folks feel like, well, this isn't working, but I have to stay, right? And we talk through why they have to stay, or I want to go for something else, but I might not make it, one, or two, I'd feel disloyal if I left. And I think it's talking folks through those challenges. But I think when you really get down to the conversation, most people are pretty clear on what they want. I think they just need an objective person to sit with them as they have a conversation around their personal ambition, because everyone's got a different goal.
What are the markers of a good mentor versus someone who's not so good at it? I presume over your career, you've had both. You've had people that are good at it and people that aren't good at it, because that's the way humans are wired.
Yeah, I come at this as somebody who learned a lot of these lessons maybe a little bit later in my career than would have been optimal. And so I've had some great mentors and I've had some less than great mentors. For me, a less than great mentor wants to tell you what you need to do. You know what you need to do? That typically precedes a statement that probably has more to do with the mentor's perspective or the mentor's path to success than an individual. I think a good mentor asks questions. So why would you do this? Or, you know, what are the pros and cons of doing this versus this, right? How do you feel when you talk about the current challenge? How do you feel when you talk about this new challenge that you're considering? What would stop you from going for it? What would keep you here? So I think asking people to sit in how they feel and how they think for a little bit, normally it actually comes pretty clear. And I'll tell you, when someone does their I ask them up front, sort of like, what's your biggest issue? What are you wrestling with? 30 seconds of exposition in my heart of hearts, I can kind of tell where the answer is going to be. But the conversation is much longer because we're human and I'd rather have them get to it. And I don't mean to be disingenuous and say, I obviously have the right answer and I'm just going to pat someone on the head as they walk through the process. But I really do feel like walking through the process can help make it so and certain, as opposed to leave something in the gray. And I think most of us like certainty. And I think the world of employment and engagement and our professional development can sometimes feel like we're not stepping from solid place to solid place. We're sort of like trying to walk out of a slowly moving car or step onto a slowly moving train. It seems like things are definitely in motion. And it's a challenge, I think, for our brains to accept that there won't be certainty as we step. But I think that's partially life. I think we fool ourselves believing that there is certainty. And when you look at the market over the last few years with the pandemic, with the layoffs and then the hiring and a lot of layoffs we've seen in 23 and even in the beginning of 24, the idea that because I believe it's so, it's certain, I think is absolutely not the case. So I think we need to embrace that uncertainty and allow it to motivate us, right? As opposed to be dispiriting.
No, and the ability to ask questions and have people sort of go help them, guide them on a path of self-discovery, I think is the right way to describe it. Because people, you can see where they're going and you can say, go here, but it's not as effective as if they get that place on their own.
Yeah, no, I mean, there are some things that I can suggest. Hey, here's a great person for you to talk to. Or if you're not sure about that, here's a friend who does that. I mean, one of the beauties of being in practice for 30 years is I do know lots of people as a dyed-in-the-wool extrovert. And so, you know, my set of connections, my network is huge, and I love that. And I love being able to say, well, if you don't know, here's a couple people you can talk to. Because I think imagining how a reality would be is really hard for some folks. But having someone just tell you about what their reality is or was, right, in a particular role or a particular industry or company is so helpful. So I think I am pointed about you should really go and do like a conversation to gain more information. But I think with the right amount of data inputs and the right amount of self-questioning, the answer typically is sort of right there.
So you describe yourself as an extrovert, which clearly you are. And there are plenty of extroverts in the legal profession. But there are also plenty of introverts in the legal profession. How do you work with the person who you identify as an introvert who may have their own barriers to building networks and reticent for connecting with people? How do you deal with that dynamic?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. You know, I appreciate that we all kind of come at it with different sort of RPM set point. I'm somebody who's energized walking into a room full of people I don't know. Not that I don't have some like, I don't know anyone. But I get over it fairly quickly. Again, introverts have strong, tight networks. They just may approach certain circumstances and situations a little differently to me. What I would say to somebody who's an introvert is there is no particular way that you need to be to have these conversations or to do this self-examination. If networking is going to be a key, though, to making sure that not just your direct manager, but that others in the team, division, group, department, company see you as somebody who has promise in addition to ambition, you know, I would encourage folks to, within their comfort level, to seek out opportunities to interact with those decision makers, right? And it may not be up in, you know, presenting up in front of a group of 100 people. It may be smaller opportunities, right? It may be engineering one-on-one opportunities to have that same conversation that for somebody like me might be perfectly comfortable to do it in a much more one to N or one to X situation. So I think it's finding ways to convey the same information to the same decision makers, maybe in a different form that feels a lot more comfortable for the individual.
So how long has the Catalyst program been around? Is it relatively new?
It is. It is. When I got to hand my team over to the gal who used to report to me and to shift some of my client responsibilities, it freed up time and I was able to set up the program last year. This will be the second year that we do the program. And I'm thrilled because last year it was kind of a super lean organization. And this year I've brought in some folks who went through last year's program to help enrich and augment the program. I imagine we're going to have a group like that every year that helps us to tweak and improve. I'm a huge believer in the Japanese concept of Kaizen, of constant iterations and the ability to recognize that no matter how good it was, that we have the ability to make it better. And sometimes just to make it better by sharing responsibilities, and other times truly to change the nature of the offering to make it that much more meaningful for the people going through it. The goal, too, of course, is to take the work that we do in the smaller Catalyst program for a handful of the folks in the law department and ensure that that same content is shared across the legal department. And I do work with folks outside the legal department in various different groups in the bank, having been here, like I said, 2 decades. There's a lot of folks I know across the bank writ large who, you know, again, need to hear the same message. I'm a huge believer that the message is critical and important to hear. Sometimes I think having a closed cohort with some specific responsibility and accountability tends to drive progress a little farther, a little faster. But frankly, I love the programming. I love the program we've put together, but it's programming that I consume as well. I'm not at this point in my career all done. I'm still somebody who is learning and growing and thinking about how I can show up differently and better to make sure that my impact is what I want it to be. And that when I'm done, I've left behind the achievements, the results, the outcomes that I hope to create. I think all of us want that, right? We want to matter. We want to think that what we do has made a difference. And we all have different jobs and different constructs, different work setups. But I think that's the human nature of it all, is to feel like we've grown, we've made a difference. And so that's most of my self-advocacy is around helping individuals to realize their own goals, both in terms of role and level and industry, but also in terms of that sense of accomplishment or achievement. And maybe it's because I am 30 years into my career, I'm starting to think about legacy. I'm starting to think about, you know, what it's going to look like when I'm done. Other folks are on the beginning of their career or, you know, maybe at the cusp of their first few promotions. It's a little bit more absolutely forward looking, but on either end, it's still trying to figure out what's important to me and to serve that.
So how do you define success for the program when you're finished in 30 years and you look back on it and you say, this was successful because, I presume, because of the impact it's had on other people?
Yeah, no, we ask some questions at the beginning of the program and we ask them again at the end, which is, I'm optimistic about my career and I know where it's going, you know, scale it 1 to 5. I know what my next career move is. I've mapped out that career move. My leaders are aware of the plan. My leaders support the plan. So in our mind's eye, if our 6-month program has been effective, the person has done the work to get a lot clearer, not just what the larger goal is, but maybe some of the sub-goals or sub-tasks along the way, that they've got a sense of energy and optimism around it, and that they're working with powers that be, whatever that looks like for them, to move that plan forward. Now, there's some places where no changes are going to be happening. So if a goal or a raise or whatever is what's on their list of ambitions, there may be times where it's a move to another group or a move to another division or another section within the company. But in my mind's eye, it's that sense of forward-looking agency around reaching the individual's personal goal. So, you know, obviously, big bank, things don't necessarily move. We're more of a huge freighter, less of a speedboat. I think folks maybe who work at a startup are going to see more change more quickly because of the nature of the company and the small, medium-sized companies. I think as they're growing and experiencing success, certainly, you know, rising tide lifts all boats. I think larger companies, it's a little harder to see that much progress as fast. But even so, what I want is, again, that sense of agentic optimism, that sense of forward-looking belief in one's future with a sense that maybe not entirely controlling it, but we have some control about where we go and how we end up there. Because again, plenty of folks have their head down and they're doing great work, but they're really not engaging in the business of serving their ambition. And I want folks to, of course, be doing great work, obviously, but also to be in the business of serving their ambitions and demonstrating their agency around the portions they can control to make sure that they're doing as much as possible to get where they're wanting to go.
Let's talk a little bit about leading women in technology, because I know you've played an important role in that organization for now 9 or 10 years. Tell us a little bit about that organization and the role you play in it.
Well, I went through the program about 10 years ago. It's a program that started in Silicon Valley as an offshoot of the Licensing Executive Society. So mostly women, mostly attorneys, and mostly in tech companies. And since 2008, when it was formed, it really became much more broad. We've got a West Coast cohort and an East Coast cohort, and it's all roles, all levels, all industries. Because I think some of the challenges of women in the professional world are shared, regardless of the role they serve or the type of company they work in. I was really lucky to get to be part of the program. And I saw for myself, I'm doing it much later than some of the other participants in the cohort, that the content itself was amazing. But really doing it in a closed cohort is what made the difference. It wasn't just reading an article or going to a webinar. It was seeing the same people and having the same sort of small discussion group of 6 to 7 people, where again, there was responsibility and accountability, responsibility to support and encourage others, but also accountability to get your stuff done, right? For others to hold you accountable. That really, I think, made a huge difference for me in terms of how I saw my role in my own career. Again, sort of lifted my head and thought, oh, wait, I've got a job here. I thought my job was just doing a great job and realized that's table stakes. Doing an excellent job is absolutely required, but it's not sufficient necessarily to reach one's ambitions. So being able to be part of LWT, to sit on the board, and most recently for the last 5 years, I was the president, challenging time to do it during the pandemic, but even more important than ever, to give women a space to have challenging conversations around how they see themselves, where they see their challenges and obstacles, and most importantly, how they can map a path to what they want their future to look like and be supported to get there. So really, it was one of those things where I felt really privileged to get to lead the group. They've got a fantastic board, fantastic new president. I couldn't be more excited. I continue to be involved. I can't imagine not being involved somehow, but I think nonprofit leadership and board leadership generally is something that matters a lot to me. I think as we get a little bit more senior in our careers, our ability to see around corners, to see patterns, to identify, you know, risks and identify mitigation strategies and put in place sort of an optimal situation, not that it always works out perfectly, but I think, you know, that experience has been one that's been incredibly rewarding for me personally, in addition to, I believe, making a difference for the board members and also the women who've been through the program. So I think it's a win all the way around.
Absolutely. So where does this passion for helping others in their professional development, if I can describe it that way, come from? You go to law school, you start out as an IP transaction lawyer, you wind up at Wells Fargo. It looks pretty straightforward, but you've got this component to your contribution to the profession that's sort of amazing. Where does it come from?
Well, I sometimes joke that I've got 2 college-age sons. And I sometimes joke that if I'd had teen daughters who would listen to me, that maybe I would have spent less time, you know, feeling like I needed to get out there and work with the populations I work with. My friends who have teen daughters tell me they wouldn't have listened to me anyway. So probably worked out for the best. But
I was going to say, I've got teen daughters. I had teen daughters. I didn't know they listened to their parents.
I, you know, again, grass is always greener, right? One always assumes that it's going to be a little bit easier than someone else's backyard. But a lot of these lessons, like I said, I was a really hard worker. I think I did a very good job, but I don't think that I was particularly political. I don't think that I probably lacked a lot of self-awareness and nuance. And I think I probably put my head down and did the work and didn't do a lot of the self-advocacy that I'm recommending for folks. And so I come to this not like I've always done it perfectly, copy me. I come to this as, wow, I learned these lessons way late. So I'm hoping that others can learn them a little bit earlier and frankly can help others. Like I do a lot of stuff in the more esoteric or amorphous, like effective self-advocacy or strong executive presence, things that are a little bit harder to pin down to exact details. But I also do work with really tactical things like resumes and interview counseling and LinkedIn, right? Things that are a lot more specific. And there's a lot of things where I know for a fact I had it dead wrong, right? And, you know, my goal is to help people understand with greater clarity the impact they're having, because I don't think I was paying attention to the impact I was having. And because of that, my impact was not headed in the direction. I mean, I'm saying it was bad, but it was unintentional. Sometimes it was great. Sometimes it wasn't. There was no plan. There was no coherent sort of through line for how I was showing up and who I was. And having learned a lot of this later in my career, as I said, I want to make sure that the people who are younger than me like have a chance to do it without some of the forehead to brick wall sort of moments that I think I had sometimes.
I'm sure as you look back on it, there are people you can see who've had success and you know you didn't create their success because people have agency over their own success, but you can say you helped, and that's got to be incredibly gratifying.
It is incredibly gratifying. I had one of those conversations this morning with somebody who joined the bank in 2014, so 10 years ago, and has never directly worked for me, but we've had a monthly one-on-one probably the entire 10 years she's been with the bank. And, you know, I've been in more or less the same larger group, and she's jumped around a whole bunch. And so I've gotten to experience her career with her, which is sort of fun to live vicariously through my mentees, but also just to see her growth and just to hear her react to things, you know, 10 years into our relationship so differently to how she would have reacted to the same challenging, or there's moments we all have, like in our career, we've got sort of an unwelcome fact or person that shows up, right? And how she deals with this 10 years later is so different to how she dealt with it 10 years ago. And I don't feel like I'm all of the reason. That would be ridiculous to take that, but it's nice to feel like I've had my little portion of changing how she takes in her day and makes a decision about how she's going to act. I think getting people to move from victimhood to agency is everything that I've done and everything that I encourage folks to do, because I think we do work in a world where there are some trying times, right? There's some difficult projects and difficult clients and difficult folks, not all of them, luckily. I think that's the case. But I think when we can get past the how we got here or what we don't like about something and figure out how to get past it, over through it, and to where we want to be, I think when we're focused on the future and focus on, again, that optimistic ambition, I think that's the best possible place to be in, like to try and get people there.
I couldn't agree with you more. We're at our time. I want to say thank you and congratulate you on the great work you're doing. I know there are people who, if I asked them, would say you've been an incredibly important part of their professional lives. So congratulations for that and keep up the good work.
Thank you so much. And thanks for the privilege of getting to talk to folks about something that matters this much to me. Thanks for the opportunity to speak to the folks that you reach through your platform. Can't wait to see who comes out of this. Hopefully we'll realize all the different connections that you and I have, and I'll hear even more about your world and the impact that you've had, which would be great too.
Thanks for listening to Pioneers and Pathfinders. Be sure to visit thepioneerpodcast.com for show notes and more episodes. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform.